The first thing I remember is the sound of ice clinking in a glass I didn't order. It was already on the table when I sat down, sweating under the hotel lights like it had been waiting for me. The trip had been pitched as a reward, team bonding, a reset after a brutal quarter. I told myself I'd drink slowly. I told myself I'd keep it professional. I told myself a lot of things that night. Alcohol has a way of turning volume down on the voice that says stop and turning it up on the one that says it's fine. It smooths edges. It edits memory in advance. It makes the moment feel contained, harmless, temporary. By the time I noticed how close he was standing, how his hand stayed on my lower back a second longer than necessary, I was already negotiating with myself. What happened later didn't feel violent. It didn't feel forced. That's what made it harder to name. It felt like something that slid into place quietly and then refused to move. In the morning, I didn't wake up with regret. I woke up with awareness. And awareness is louder than regret ever is. On the flight home, we didn't speak. We didn't need to. We had already started managing the damage. The company liked to call itself international, but what they really meant was European in tone and ambition. We were headquartered in Lisbon, with satellite offices scattered just far enough apart to justify constant travel and just close enough to make oversight optional. I was brought in to manage cross-border accounts, which meant translating not just language, but expectation. I was the Portuguese one, the local face, the person who could smooth friction before it turned into something expensive. He had transferred in 6 months before the trip, same background as me, same accent, softened by time abroad, same ability to move between cultures without drawing attention. He was senior to me, but not by much, enough to matter, not enough to feel obvious. That's where these things usually start. The company retreat was in Mallorca, 3 days, beachfront hotel, open bar, workshops in the morning, free time in the afternoon, dinners that stretched late into the night. Management loved these trips because they looked generous and cost less than raises. People loved them because they felt seen without being evaluated. The warning signs didn't arrive as red flags. They came as small permissions, a joke that landed a little too close, a look held a beat longer than required, familiarity that skipped steps. We were paired together for a breakout session on day one. It made sense on paper, same region, overlapping clients, easy shorthand. By the second drink that evening, we were speaking Portuguese again, even though the rest of the table had switched to English. It felt private without being secret, a shared lane. I noticed the way his tone softened when he spoke to me, the way mine did too. I noticed and kept talking anyway. Alcohol didn't create anything new that night. It accelerated what was already moving. That's the part people don't like to admit. They prefer the idea of a switch flipping, something sudden and external. But the truth is slower and more uncomfortable. Boundaries don't usually collapse. They erode. He touched my arm when he laughed. I didn't move it away. I told myself it was cultural. I told myself I was overthinking. I told myself it didn't matter because nothing had happened. That logic has always been seductive to me. Nothing yet means nothing at all. Later, at the bar, the music got louder and the lighting got worse. Someone suggested shots. Someone else suggested moving closer to the water. The group fractured the way groups always do when the night gets late. People peel off into conversations that feel chosen rather than assigned. I ended up next to him again, without remembering how. He asked me if I was enjoying myself. I said yes. He asked me if I needed another drink. I said maybe. That should have been my cue to slow down. Instead, it felt like a handoff. Responsibility shifting quietly from me to the situation. When we talked about work, it felt safe. When we stopped talking about work, it felt inevitable. That's another lie people tell themselves. That inevitability erases choice. It doesn't. It just disguises it. I remember thinking about how far my room was from the bar. I remember thinking about how early the morning session started. I remember thinking about how I'd explain a hangover, not about how I'd explain him. That tells you where my head was. The elevator ride was quiet, not tense, not awkward, just quiet. The kind of quiet that feels intentional, the kind that suggests agreement without requiring words. If I'm honest, that silence is what I think about most now. Not what happened after, but how easily we both accepted it. I woke up before my alarm, the room still dim, my body heavy in a way that had nothing to do with sleep. For a few seconds, there was no panic, just inventory. The weight of the sheets, the faint smell of alcohol still on my skin, the presence of another person breathing in the room. It was only when I sat up that the narrative rushed in. Work, titles, consequences, memory sharpened by daylight. Nothing about the night replayed as violent or chaotic. That's what complicated it. It had felt mutual. It had felt chosen. It had felt like something I'd allowed myself to want without asking what it would cost. He woke up when I moved. We didn't speak right away. When he did talk, his voice was calm, measured. Too measured. He asked if I was okay. I said yes. That was true in the narrowest sense. I wasn't hurt. I wasn't upset. I wasn't confused about what had happened. I was confused about what it meant. We didn't touch again. That felt important to both of us, though we never said it. He got dressed quickly. I watched him put his watch back on, the same one he wore to client meetings. The normalcy of that detail made my stomach turn. We agreed, without saying so, that this would not leave the room. Not because it was wrong in a moral sense, but because it was inconvenient in a professional one. That distinction matters more than people admit. At breakfast, we sat at opposite ends of the table. He laughed at someone else's story. I focused on my coffee. No one noticed. Or if they did, they pretended not to. Company trips train people to look away. The morning workshop was on ethics. I wish that were a joke. It wasn't. I took notes like I always do, handwriting neat and controlled, as if discipline on the page could substitute for clarity in my head. By lunch, the strategy had formed. Not explicitly, strategically. Fewer shared spaces, neutral interactions, professional tone, no drinking that night. We didn't discuss it, but we executed it perfectly. That, more than anything else, told me how aligned we were. The thing about consent is that it doesn't end when the act does. It reverberates. It leaves questions behind. Questions about power, about sobriety, about whether a yes given under certain conditions would have existed without them. I didn't feel violated. I also didn't feel free of it. I kept replaying small moments, not to accuse him, but to interrogate myself. Would I have gone to his room sober? Would I have said no if he'd been clearer about wanting me? Would I have wanted him differently if the trip hadn't framed everything as temporary? These are not questions that lead to clean answers. They lead to management. Emotional, professional, reputational management. On the last night, there was another dinner. I skipped the wine. He noticed. I could tell by the way his eyes flicked to my glass and then away. He skipped it too. That felt like solidarity and control at the same time. Nothing else happened. That was the agreement we didn't name and kept perfectly. The flight home was early. We boarded separately. I chose a window seat. He chose the aisle two rows ahead. I watched him stow his bag, efficient and practiced. When he sat down, he didn't look back. That was kind. It was also distancing in a way that felt intentional. Somewhere over the Mediterranean, I realized that what unsettled me wasn't the sex. It was how quickly it had turned into a problem to solve. How naturally we both shifted into containment mode. That told me something about the system we worked in, and about ourselves. Back at the office, everything looked the same. That's how you know something has changed. The familiarity becomes aggressive. The routines feel like they're testing you, daring you to slip. He was careful. So was I. Emails stayed formal. Meetings stayed brief. We never found ourselves alone. On paper, the trip had been a success. New ideas, strengthened relationships. Leadership loved the photos. The residue didn't show up as guilt. It showed up as vigilance. I monitored my tone, my posture, my calendar. I noticed how easily my attention drifted when he spoke in meetings. Not because I wanted him, but because I was tracking him, measuring distance, reading subtext that may or may not have been there. Nothing overt happened. That's the part people struggle with when I try to explain this kind of thing. They want a blow up, a complaint, a consequence that matches the intensity of the experience. Sometimes that never comes. Sometimes the cost is quieter. I found myself less willing to drink at work events, less willing to blur lines, not because I'd learned a lesson, but because I'd learned how expensive ambiguity can be. Alcohol didn't feel like freedom anymore. It felt like risk exposure. Months later, he transferred again. Different city, different team. There was no goodbye, no closure. just a calendar update and a handover email copied to too many people. When his name disappeared from my inbox, I felt relief and something like loss, tangled together. I never reported anything. There was nothing to report in the way companies understand it. No complaint would have survived contact with the facts. That's not an indictment of policy. It's a description of reality. What stayed with me was the knowledge of how quickly professionalism can accommodate almost anything if both parties are invested in silence. How systems don't need to be corrupt to protect themselves. They just need people who know how to behave. On another company trip, a year later, I watched a younger colleague laugh too hard at a manager's joke. I saw the same permissions forming. I didn't intervene. That's the part I'm least proud of. Not because I owed her protection, but because I recognized the pattern and chose not to disrupt it. The night in Mallorca didn't ruin my career. It didn't define me. But it calibrated me. It taught me how easily boundaries can feel consensual and still leave you managing the aftermath alone. On the flight home, we sat apart like strangers who knew each other too well. That distance was the agreement we honored most faithfully. And sometimes I wonder if that's the real lesson these places teach. Not how to connect, but how to separate cleanly when connection becomes inconvenient. I still think about the sound of ice in that glass, how it arrived before I asked for it, how I accepted it without comment. Some choices announce themselves, others just sit there, sweating under the lights, waiting for you to pick them up.